Welcome to the Line Movement MMA Betting Show. I'm Daniel Levy from Best Fight Picks and Half the Battle. Joined now by Dan Tom of MMA Junkie and the Protect Your Neck podcast. Today, we're going to be talking the big one, UFC 257, the return of Conor McGregor. He's taking on Dustin the Diamond Poirier, the rematch 6 years in the making. It's going down this Saturday night in Abu Dhabi, Yas Island, Fight Island. And Dan Tom, what a great way to kick off the pay-per-view season here with the return of the Mac taking on the most exciting fighter in the history of the division, Dustin Poirier.
It is. It's a great rematch. And, you know, Conor has a lot of these chapters that he's seemingly sprouting or leaves these books open, and he gets to add a chapter with Poirier, a guy who definitely deserves that big payday, right?
No questions asked. I mean, when you talk about paid in full, I mean, Poirier, the thing, they're such different guys, but they're both so exciting for a variety of reasons. I mean, Poirier just seems like more relatable because, you know, none of us have like $50 million in the bank. And but I'm not hating on that because I want $50 million in the bank. You know what I'm saying? So Conor McGregor, it's goals. Those parts are goals. But like Poirier, just even with all the fame he's received, still so down to earth, still, you know, has a connection with his fans. But I understand, and that's not to take away from McGregor, because if McGregor walks on the street by himself, he's about to get mobbed. You know what I'm saying? Like, he needs the bodyguards. He needs, you know, when he pulls up to a venue, it's not just him in his car. There's a security card in front of him. There's a security card behind him. I mean, McGregor is literally the biggest superstar in the history of mixed martial arts, Dan Tom.
He is. And, you know, you talk about that mob and whatnot, and it's strange, you know, not to peel back behind the curtain too much, but this three fight offering in Abu Dhabi, of course, is closed off with Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier, the card we are breaking down for you right now. Be sure to like that video, subscribe if you haven't already. But there is audience in attendance. We kind of felt that a bit, I would say, when Max Holloway faced Calvin Kattar on UFC on ABC1. Didn't really feel the audience too much here for UFC on ESPN 20. So for UFC 257, Dan, I wonder where, you know, will it be a lot more, less? Will it be just right? And how will that affect it? Because people talk about Tony Ferguson perhaps being one of those few fighters who is suffering right now in this pandemic era who could use the crowd. I think Conor thrives with that crowd as well. Whereas Poirier, with the criticism has been traditionally levied on him, is that he breaks in the big moments. Well, without the crowd factor, is that one less thing he has to deal with in order to bring his skills to the table for the rematch?
I mean, talking about breaking in big moments, he didn't break at UFC 236 in Atlanta, Georgia, when I saw him whoop the great Max Holloway for five straight rounds, and he got the interim belt around his waist. So I think he's really come a long way. And McGregor, he's come a long way too, in not just for his fighting, but his personal life, because I was always a huge McGregor fan. I mean, what he did for the sport, and just not just in terms of bringing eyeballs, but the performances too, man. I mean, the guy was always out there, devastating knockouts, beat the who's who, dethroned Jose Aldo, beat Holloway, beat Poirier, Mendez, Eddie Alvarez got dethroned by him, Nate Diaz, Cowboy Cerrone, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I've always had a lot of like admiration for McGregor, but then he started doing some shit that I just couldn't get behind, man. You know, for example, throwing a dolly at a bus full of fighters. Like, I get that you got your beef with Khabib, but like, for example, if I have a beef with someone on the baseball team, I'm not about to go throw something at the entire team. I'm going to, you know, me and the one guy that have beef, hey, we can go to the playground. No big deal. Like, you don't have to take out your frustrations on everyone else. So that kind of made me lose some respect. And then him punching old men in bars, I just couldn't get behind it. But I got to tell you what, we're all human and we all make mistakes. Now, our mistakes might not be on the same level. You know, how Dan Levy fucks up might be different than how Conor McGregor fucks up, because you won't ever see me punching an old man in a bar. But I truly feel like he's redeemed himself. Now that he's a father, you just see a different vibe, even how he relates to his opponents. You know, he's not as vicious, I guess, with his words anymore. And I always like the trash talk. Don't get me wrong. Dan Tom knows I love some good shit talking. But I like mature Conor too, man. I mean, seeing him with his kids at the hotel, like, it's nice to see that, you know, even him with all the success and all the things that come with it, and, you know, the white girl up the nose, you know what I'm saying, Dan Tom? He's put all that shit behind him. It seems like he's got his head on straight, and we might get to see some more of those great moments that he gave us back in the day.
Yeah, he could, Dan. Now, I want to be careful about, you know, making any too grand assumptions as far as like where he's at. Because honestly, you know, that more serves for him outside of the octagon, which is very important, if not more important, when you have as much to lose as McGregor, right? But when we're breaking down this matchup, I feel like the mainstay issues, both good and bad with McGregor, are what it's going to come down to, or at least that's how I'm kind of approaching this with both guys. You know, what are some of the mainstay problems? You know, with Dustin Poirier, for example, you could argue that fast starters have always been troublesome for him. When it comes to southpaws, they have a bit of a mixed record. Poirier's record, I believe, is positive at 3-2, but you know, even in some of those victories, like over guys like, you know, Jim Miller, who, you know, tore up his leg, or even Jonathan Brookins, who was able to stun him. Granted, that was back in the day. The southpaws he did beat still had their moments. And what is Conor McGregor at the end of the day for any criticisms you want to, even his biggest critics will tell you, yeah, man, the guy's a fast starter. He can come out there, lay pinpoint accuracy, and really get on the ball. And that's kind of what we saw in their first fight. And I don't want to be too reductive or run the risk of being too reductive in this analysis, Dan, but if you can kind of see where I'm going here, I feel like a lot of those mainstay problems do exist. I'm hoping that we don't get a repeat, let me just say, before I throw it back, because I do believe that both men have improved. And Dustin Poirier, I mean, he is one of the greats. He's put on some of the great. When we're going to talk about the four kings of boxing, whatever the equivalent to MMA is, Dustin Poirier belongs in there. He's not done giving us great fights. So I hope I'm wrong and this goes longer, but I have a feeling one way or the other, this is gonna end earlier than it does later.
I mean, when I make my Mount Rushmore for the lightweight division, because I can't make an MMA Mount Rushmore anymore. There's too many fighters to pick from. So I do per weight class, Dan Tom. And, you know, when I talk about the lightweight division, obviously I talk about Khabib. I talk about Conor. I talk about Poirier. And, you know, I talk about Hawaii's own BJ Penn. So those four would be on the lightweight Mount Rushmore for me. But look, as far as Poirier is concerned, for me, it's tough to break down this fight, which it would seem like it'd be easy to because it's McGregor versus Poirier. But these are like, Poirier is like my all-time favorite fighter, so I have a lot of bias towards him. You know what I mean? Not only watching him win the belt in person when I was so heavily invested in him winning the belt, and all the way back to his UFC debut versus Josh Grispy. I mean, you remember the kind of run Josh Grispy was on in the WEC when he won four straight fights in a row, finished everybody, and was supposed to fight Jose Aldo. Jose pulls out the fight. They give it to this new guy, Dustin the Diamond Poirier. Who's he? Poirier comes out there, destroys Josh Grispy, and ever since then, man, he's had a storied career in the lightweight division. I truly believe, and I will say this till the day I die, I think Dustin Poirier is the most exciting fighter in lightweight history. I mean, can you name one boring Dustin Poirier fight? And there's like a fucking 20 to 30 fight sample size too, Dan Tom, and I don't think you can.
No, man, I don't disagree with your bias there at all. You know, he's got such a great sample size, and I always got to give you credit for that Max Holloway call, man. That was really spot on. Not a lot of people were on that, and that line was pretty wide, my friend. But, you know, even me having to put my own Dustin Poirier bias aside, I still don't feel like I'm giving him enough credit here, because as much as I want to be contrarian, I feel like I don't want to say if I agree with the odds. I definitely want to get your opinion on that, Dan. But I agree that McGregor should be favored in this spot.
I've only picked against Poirier twice in my life. When he fought Conor the first time, and the reason why was you could just see Poirier was done before the fight even started there. It was acting extremely uncharacteristic, was emotional, just played into all the hype, just wasn't himself. So I picked against him there. The only other time I've ever picked against Poirier was the Khabib fight, because I said, like, if you remember, the odds were like, I don't remember, like, what, plus 250, plus 260. I said, I'd lay this price on Dustin Poirier against any lightweight on planet Earth except Khabib. So it pained me to pick Khabib. And I love Khabib, too. He's unbelievable, legend. But I've just always gravitated towards Poirier, the way he fights. And, you know, we've had some exchanges before. You know, he knows that me and Shaq have supported him since day one. So behind the scenes, he's always been really cool to us. So I'm so biased towards Poirier. But that being said, once we take all the fandom aside and we actually break down the matchup at hand, I really pray that Poirier can get this into the third, fourth, and fifth round, you know, because I know that early going, the thing that we love about Poirier is that you hit him with it, with your hardest shot, and he keeps walking forward, and then he start, then you start breaking. And then when he hurts his opponents and he starts doing the Poirier blitz, I mean, watch out. That's how highlight reels are made. The issue, Dan Tom, is I don't want you taking early damage against a guy like McGregor, because oftentimes you don't come back. And the two losses that McGregor's had inside the octagon, Nate Diaz has always had the most insane durability that we've ever seen in the lightweight division. The only person to ever stop him via strikes was Josh Thompson, but we don't talk about that because that never happened. You know what I mean, Dan Tom? Like that was like an abomination to the sport. So that shit never happened. So as far as I'm concerned, Nate Diaz has never been stopped via strikes. So the kind of shots he took versus McGregor that first fight, I mean, everybody else is knocked unconscious to those shots. And Nate Diaz just has otherworldly durability, which you saw in the Masvidal fight. I mean, you've seen it throughout his whole career. I don't got to sit here and list all of Nate Diaz's fights. We know he can take a punch. And Poirier can too, especially at 55s compared to 45s. It's just these shots coming from McGregor are something different, man. And that's where I'm worried for Poirier. So I do think the early going, instead of going right after Connor, maybe play it on the outside a little bit, you know, see what McGregor brings to the table. Let ease into the fight. Let him throw all his best shots, but don't get, you know, emotionally invested. Don't get carried away. Don't start brawling. And then the reason that McGregor slows down, and people talk about his cardio. Listen, guys, I use this example all the time. When we talk about his cardio, it's not because he's not out here strength and conditioning, you know, running his miles, running his sprints. Of course he's running his sprints. Look at the shape he's in. It's more so because his style, you know how I talked about that analogy about when, you know, when you push that pedal to the metal, the gas is going to run out just by science, you know, when you're in a car. McGregor goes so damn hard, man. He puts everything into every shot. And as a result, that's going to fatigue the machine. That's just what it is. And I know he won a 5-round decision over Diaz. He had to catch a second win in that fight. You know, he did slow down. You start to slow down against a guy like Poirier, he can go all day. He will tee off on you. It's just getting to that point is what I'm struggling with, Dan Tom.
Yeah, I agree with you too. And, you know, I think the two potential adjustments Poirier could make, I think that people will point to his wrestling and leg or calf kicks. I think less of the wrestling, though, because Conor McGregor's wrestling defense, very underrated. And two, Poirier tends to get his shots against the cage, and you're going to have to push McGregor back, who is a deadly counterpuncher, early. I don't think he's going to want to do that. So I think the smart move, as far as you saying that he should sit back, which I agree, would be to throw those calf kicks. He's going to have that same stance matchup. However, McGregor's kicking ability is pretty underrated, too. So I'll be curious to see if either guy tries to get the jump on the other guy by attacking their legs. Because, again, Poirier has shown that he can be hit with some leg kicks. Jim Miller fight, Justin Gaethje fight, etc. So that's kind of my adjustment to watch for. But kind of like I've been hinting toward, ultimately, I think that in rematches, you know, McGregor is much more smarter than he realize, than people give him credit for. In general, he does more homework than people realize. And I just think the fast-starting southpaw who can counter with that power, I just think kind of like Khabib, but in an obviously much completely different way, is just a bad matchup for Poirier at the end of the day. So although I love Poirier, I'm going to go with McGregor, and I'm actually going to go with McGregor round one.
Wow, very bold pick, even though we saw it happen 6 years ago. And speaking of myths, another myth is that McGregor can't grapple. Yes, he can grapple. The times that he got messed up on the mat, firstly, he literally emptied the tank against Diaz. So it wasn't about him skipping jujitsu class. It was about when you're gassed out and you have a black belt on top of you, well, you're fucked. And then Khabib, I mean, who doesn't Khabib do that to? And before someone writes in the comments, oh, Ally Quinta didn't get finished. Guys, Ally Quinta got his ass whooped for 5 straight rounds. Khabib felt so unthreatened by Ally Quinta that he literally put on a jab clinic against the guy. So, I mean, Khabib goes out there, finishes Poirier and McGregor because those guys are actual threats. So don't even try me on this bullshit that Ally Quinta was his toughest test. No, he wasn't. That was like a tune-up fight. But back to this. So, You know, it just pains me to pick against Poirier because I love the guy so much. And I like McGregor too. It's just that McGregor's got the 50 mil in the bank. McGregor's got the 100 mil in the bank. McGregor's done everything. Let Poirier get a couple mansions. Let Poirier change his life. Don't get me wrong. Poirier is doing well. Poirier is not going to have to work another day in his life, but like, let's secure his grandchildren. Let's secure their children. You know what I mean? I want him to be on that level. How? Because look, if you beat McGregor, that changes your life. And when's the last time you saw a striker in the UFC, you know, go their whole career without getting knocked out? And I'm saying they've had to finish their career. So we can't talk about like Izzy Adesanya. His career is not, and he got knocked out in kickboxing. But I'm saying, when's the last time you saw someone have an entire career? They're a striker in the UFC and they haven't been knocked out at least one time. So how, like, dude, could you imagine if Poirier goes out here and knocks out McGregor? Like, what kind of moment that'll be? Like, that would be epic as hell. But I think it might be a bit of a pipe dream. I hope not. I hope Poirier wins. But I got to go McGregor. And the reason why, I think Poirier gets hit too much in the early going, and Conor's not a guy you want to get hit against. It'd be beautiful to see him eat the shots, keep coming forward, you know, a dogfight back and forth, you know, a battle of wills, see who the tougher man is, see who wants it more. If it's that kind of fight, I got Poirier. I just have a hard time visualizing it being that type of fight. So I'm really sorry, Dustin. I hope you don't see this. And if you do, I really hope you win. But I think I got to go with McGregor here.
Wow. Interesting. I don't have any betting angles, Dan, that I feel strong about this. But I will say that if you are in my camp and you think it's going to be done in the first, you can get it under 1.5 for plus money. Aside from that, I mean, there's no real angles, to be honest, from money lines to anything in between that's jumping out to me. Maybe you feel different before we move on, Dan.
I mean, I just want to sit back and enjoy this fight as a fan. I mean, it's McGregor and Poirier. You know what I'm saying, man? I mean, if it was a pick'em, okay, then maybe we'd have a different conversation. But listen, some people are saying there's value on minus 300 for Conor. Because, I mean, if it actually goes down with the first round knockout, then there is. But, you know, right now, me and you are talking before the fact. So we don't know if that's going to happen or not. We got to stay tuned. So laying a price like that, I mean, it's warranted. You saw their first fight. But, I mean, it's been 6 years. They're in a different weight class. Both guys have gone on to become champions since. So it's just, it's a completely different matchup. But ultimately, the reason that I lean towards McGregor is because Poirier does eat a lot of shots to this day. And maybe a guy like Dan Hooker can't capitalize, but McGregor, he can. So I got to go with him. Now, Dan, Tom, the co-main event of the evening, we got the UFC debut of Iron Mike Chandler, the former Bellator multiple-time champion. And a guy that a lot of people consider to be one of the top lightweights on planet Earth. And before, you know, some of these casuals start talking about how, oh, he comes from the B leagues. Guys, Michael Chandler beat Eddie Alvarez. So don't even try me with no B league bullshit. This guy is an elite lightweight right now. And that's all I got to say about that. If you beat Eddie Alvarez, I got nothing else to say in terms of validating how legit you are, because you don't just beat Eddie Alvarez, especially at that point, Dan Tom, when he was world champion over there. I mean, you don't just beat that guy unless you're legit. So Mike Chandler's legit.
That was one of my favorite rises to watch, man. Watching him, especially he was working out of Extreme Couture during that time. So that was just something special. So perhaps there's some biased, heads up here. That being said, I'm glad to see that his opponent, Dan Hooker, is not amongst those, you know, casuals. Dan Hooker sounds like he is definitely respecting Michael Chandler, which is good, you know, especially if you're a Dan Hooker supporter. Dan Hooker is the favorite, which I don't have any issue over. We've seen the UFC to Bellator letdowns. Obviously can happen the other way around. We could get a letdown if you're a Michael Chandler fan here. But I like that this is three rounds, Dan. The big cage does favor Dan Hooker, who we've seen a bunch of different approaches. I'm curious if he's going to shore up his defense. He's went a little old school Dan. And when he does go old school Dan, well, that's when, you know, at worst, Edson Barbosa happens. At best, Dustin Poirier happens, where he's just taking a bunch of damage. he doesn't want to do that here. He's taken a lot of damage. And kind of like you said, Dan, like eventually the bottom will drop out, even on these most durable cats, right? And that is Dan Hooker. He's a striker. He's durable and all those things. That being said, I don't think Mike Chandler, nor should he, but I don't think he does play the striking game. We've seen him plenty of times throughout his career do it way too much and disregard defense, just like Dan Hooker, way too much, right? But after that loss to Primus, and then even after to Fieri, is that Chandler has kind of gone back to and trended back to his wrestling more. And I think he does that with longer guys in general, right? You go back, he doesn't face many long guys, but when he did, long guys who could strike and counter like Yamauchi, or, you know, maybe technically had a stoppage win over him before, like Brent Primus, bigger lightweights. He went right to the wrestling and kind of wrestled him out. I predicted for him to do it in those matches. He did. So I'm going to go ahead and, you know, if I'm not giving my cards too soon here, and I'm going to predict Chandler to wrestle for three. The question is, though, Dan, is he going to run into a knee or something in the process, right, before that 15 minutes is up? I think that is the big question here.
It's a fantastic question. I mean, Chandler is the perfect height for that big knee up the middle of Dan Hooker. But on the flip side, Dan Tom, Dan Hooker is the perfect height for the D1 All-American wrestling credentials of Michael Chandler. Because, you know, shorter guys, lower center of gravity, much easier to get in on the hips, take the guy down. That knee, though, that shit comes out of nowhere, and he can get some serious elevation on it. And when he lands those things, man, bodies hit the floor. So there's things going for both these guys. So I think this fight should be a pick'em. For Hooker, the calf kicks. Let's just get that out the way. I mean, saw what Brett Primus did to Chandler. I mean, he literally deadened the nerve to the point where the guy couldn't walk. And I don't want to make the Henry Cejudo comparison because, you know, when that happened to Henry against DJ, he overcame it and came back to win the belt. But it's not Chandler's fault because what happened was, so the round ends, right? And Chandler goes to sit on the stool. And for some reason, someone moves the stool from out from under him. So when he goes to sit, he actually falls down. And then the ref's like, oh, fight's over. So he actually wanted to go back out there for the second round, but someone moved the stool from under him. He falls on the ground. They thought it was because he couldn't walk. So he didn't get a chance to have his Henry Cejudo moment where he overcomes that kind of adversity in that fight. But they rematched, and he whooped his ass in the rematch. So the calf kicks, that's going to be big. The length, I mean, we're talking about, it says Chandler's 5'8", but between you and me, Dan Tom, he's 5'6". 5'6 versus 6'1", that means you're going to have to close that goddamn distance. And also, I know you mentioned it. I know I mentioned it. I'm going to mention it again. That knee. That fucking knee from, and excuse my language, guys. That knee from Dan Hooker is a game changer. So, like, Chandler could be winning this whole fight. One knee. Good night, Irene. So he's got to be super careful. But I agree with you. I mean, I think that Hooker shown a weakness to the wrestling, not just back in the day against Jason Knight. How about his most recent fight against Poirier? And you can say he blew his load in that second round trying to get the finish. But I love Poirier, my favorite fighter. Poirier is not a D1 All-American. Poirier was out there taking him down, lacing up the legs, and Hooker couldn't get back up. So why am I supposed to believe that if Chandler takes him down, that's going to be any different? So couple different ways this fight could go. And then Chandler is a bit on the chinnier side. You know, I've seen him knocked out more than once. I've seen him wobbled more than once. The Will Brooks fight, most notably, was very uncomfortable to watch. You remember the second one where he didn't know where he was and all that? I was like, yo, like, what the hell is going on here? And then against Patricio as well. So he can be knocked out as well. And Hooker's got that Kiwi chin, man. He's got an iron jaw. It's crazy the amount of shots he takes. And it's like, just like his wrestling defense is nothing new, his striking defense is nothing new either. Because you go back to that Maximo Blanco fight he had in Japan, and Maximo Blanco was landing everything but the kitchen sink, and Hooker refused to go down. So Hooker has an insane chin, but Chandler brings some one-punch knockout power too. So both guys got serious paths to victory, but it's not the dead pick'em I think it should be. There's dog money on Chandler, so I'll take Chandler here.
Yeah, I'm obviously going to take Chandler too, especially that it's three rounds, less time for things to go wrong. But I like that you mentioned the chin, and I went back to watch that Will Brooks fight. It was so weird, man. I think he gray matered himself in that fight. He goes through like a hip toss, and he hits his head, but it, you can't really get a camera view. And Will Brooks hits him with a right hand so shortly after, but I think he was already hurt before the two Brooks right hands landed. That was just such a crazy fight, though. But yeah, I do think that the wrestling gets it done. I will give City Kickboxing and Dan Hooker credit. He was able to get some takedowns in that Poirier fight, and everybody at City Kickboxing have been making noted efforts on their wrestling improvements. So I want to give them credit there, but yeah, I don't think it's going to be nearly enough. You can't make up those deficits in this due time. Plus the damage, you know, again, even though Hooker's got a better chin, you want to talk about racking up damage and mileage. You know, I know Chandler had a crazy fight style, but more relevantly too, even overall, if you want to compare the two, Hooker's got more of a ticking time bomb as far as mileage and the bottom dropping out, if you ask me. Just my opinion, but I'm going to go with Chandler by unanimous decision. It's going to probably be bloody, but I'm going to go unanimous decision.
No, I mean, you're right. I mean, how long can he take those clean KO blows to the chin for until he finally goes down? So I'm curious about that as well. Now, next up in the flyweight division, the featured bout, we got Jessica Eye taking on Joanne Calderwood. And I'm going to let my boy Dan Tom take this one first. Both these ladies train in Vegas. I'm sure you might know a little something-something. So floor is yours, my man.
Yeah, man. Speaking of, you know, Vegas connections, I feel like I got to ask around on this one. I'm still seeing some familiar faces in Jessica Eye's corner. Her grappling coach who followed her out here from Ohio, she's transplanted some of those coaches out there too. So she's got a bit of that, I guess, at home feel. Now, full disclosure, when I submitted my junkie picks at the beginning of the week, staff picks, which have not come out yet, and I still have time to change as I may reserve my right here. I submitted Calderwood. It's an admittedly close fight, but I think my thinking at the time was just, you know, the Calderwood has improved her grapple, even though she got submitted, and that's kind of been her, you know, her susceptibility, if you will. Like, as far as the wrestling and other things go, she actually has made improvements, if I'm being objective and critical. Plus her output, I believe she's top five as far as right behind your girl Yan Xiaonan as far as striking differentials of all women divisions, by the way. This is including Nunes, Shevchenko, you know, Yan Jacek. She's top five. That is the fighter we're talking about, which is Joanne Calderwood. So it's not just so much of looking at, you know, the UFC.com stats page and seeing that she lands more strikes per minute. You got to be careful about that because, you know, she comes from a striking volume heavy division, whereas Jessica Eye had like a four or five fight losing streak to wrestlers where she was on her back. You know what I'm saying? So all those sample sizes are skewed. You know, Jessica Eye's been in the UFC a little longer. And a lot of those fights, again, upper weight class, she was being dominated by completely different style matches that the weight class holds. So don't think that the volume is a landslide difference that the stats say, because Jessica Eye, even though there's plenty of times where you're like, come on, Jessica, I wish you could throw more, whether or not you picked her or played her, she will keep pace if a fighter brings it. So if Calderwood, you're picking her for a pace and she brings it, well, Jessica Eye is going to answer it. Now, will it be enough for her to win? I don't know. But as we saw in the Viviani Araujo fight, now you can say whatever you want about Araujo's performance. It wasn't like a Talia Santos performance that you like to point to, Dan, where like she has one performance where she just does nothing, right? Like Araujo was still fighting. She still hit takedowns. She was still getting after it in parts of it. So whatever criticisms as far as gas tank or performance, and certainly not her best, it wasn't like it was like, you know, Araujo was just like laying down dead for her either. You know what I'm saying? So you definitely got to give Jessica Eye some credit there, regardless of how you view that fight. So I guess what I'm trying to say here, Dan, is my early pick was Calderwood, but I am like this close to changing it to Jessica Eye after I rewatched those fights. The Calvillo fight, you know, was very frustrating for sure. And perhaps, you know, another former strawweight can go get takedowns. I just credited Calderwood's improved wrestling, right? Maybe she's the one that gets takedowns here, which is kind of the troublesome part of the equation. But as far as volume, and you see like the right hands that Maya and other fighters and Andrea Lee was able to hit Calderwood in her last two fights, like they were hitting right hands all day. And that is the one thing that Jessica Eye sets up really well off her jab. This is going to be a ridiculously close fight. How are you seeing it, Dan?
So you're right about the output. I mean, statistically speaking, we cannot argue against that. I just kind of feel like Jessica Eye's more proven against top competition. I mean, she beat Chukagian, she beat Araujo. I mean, she's beat some top level fighters in that division. And every single time that Joanne steps up, she gets arrogant and she loses. And I think that's kind of happening now. You hear her interviews talking about how, oh, Jessica I walks around like she's the school bully and blah, blah, blah. And then you hear Jessica talking. She's like, I've never met Joanne Calderwood in my life. You know, so I'm just like, yeah, JoJo's doing it again. I think JoJo, she's talented, but she's a massive flake. She can't wrestle. I got Jessica I here. Look, if it was JoJo plus 150, maybe a different conversation would ensue. But I at dog money, I disagree. I think she should be the slight favorite. So I'll take Jessica here.
Yeah, that was another thing, Dan. I'm looking at the lines now, and I don't want to say this because it doesn't look like Jessica I ever went to a favorite, but I could have swore even the line did flip at one point, and that was maybe perhaps part of the other reason. You know, kind of we sometimes use that dog logic in a close fight, right? But now, you know, from what I'm seeing, you're right. Jessica I is the underdog, and even if you're not picking Jessica I, folks, it's in a close fight like this, I believe that theory does stand true. And yeah, I'm probably going to be officially switching my pick. So why don't I start it here on the line movement, MMA show. I'll go Jessica I as well too. Gosh, darn it. A little Eric Nixick bias there.
Make sure y'all hit that like button, hit that subscribe, follow us at Line_movement, check us out on Apple Podcasts. We truly appreciate it. Linemovement.com. Now, Dan, Tom, let's talk about this lightweight matchup between Matt Frivola and Otman Azaitar. This should be a hell of a fight. So I guess the big question is, when was the last time you saw Otman Azaitar stuff a takedown?
I saw him do it on Teemu Pakalin. I was just watching that fight before we got on this show. And he stuffed two, a kind of half-hearted attempt and a single leg. But I like the body language that he gave me. I don't know if that answers your question, but that was the best that I saw as far as relevant.
And I appreciate you answering the question, because he's going to have to stuff takedowns here, because I'll tell you this right here, right now on the Line Movement MMA betting show. If Matt Frivola tries to stand and bang with Otman Azaitar, he is going to hit the deck, and he's going to do so emphatically, Dan, Tom. So striker versus wrestler here. That's what we have here. I mean, listen, Frivola is a very tough guy. I mean, you saw his UFC debut against Polo. Didn't go his way. Comes back against Lando. Beats Jalen Turner, beats Luis Pena. I mean, he hasn't had any easy fights. He fought the two tallest guys in the division back-to-back. Great wrestler, Sarah Longo, just tough American. I like him a lot. But Otman Azaitar and his brother Abu, they're real badasses, not just in the cage. Don't fuck with them in the cage. Don't fuck with them outside the cage, is all I got to say. These guys are true royalty. And not only that, they can fight too. You know what I mean, Dan, Tom? And I think that if Matt Frivola can't grind this one out, he is in deep, 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 deep trouble, Dan, Tom. So I got to lean with Otman Azaitar via vicious, brutal faceplant knockout here.
Me too, man. You know, I try to, you know, fade these first round KO guys. I think I might have reluctantly even picked Worthy, even though I wasn't confident in it. I don't believe that it was kind of the grappling style that you want to see. These guys get grinded out if you're playing against the athletic knockout type. Frivola's got good jiu-jitsu, decent wrestling base, nothing special. I believe he just wrestled in high school, but knows how to get after it. You know, splitting time training as well with Billy Q. You know, I love me some Billy Quarantillo down in South Florida, plus Ray Longos. So I'm sure he's getting wrestling looks. He's going to be chaining takedowns. But, man, Dan, you know, shout out to my MMA junkie colleague, Simon Head, who gave me some prospects to kind of do some homework on, and one of them made my top Bellator prospects list, Ilyar Buliad. He was the most least known name, but this guy looks like a Middle Eastern Conor McGregor out there from the southpaw stands, and he could kind of wrestle. And I'm like, wow, this guy looks like he can actually defend takedowns. Like, what's going on? I go to see where he's training, and he's flying around on jets with the Azaitar brothers, Dan. And you know the Azaitar brothers, those guys mean business. They're very well connected. And, you know, he's getting the wrestling training and the striking training. And I'm like, oh, wow, more good guys. So it's not just a coincidence. It's not like these guys are just running deep gangsters, you know, getting fights and taking their fights and, you know, pouring gasoline on people. No, they're putting some real training in, and they're doing some stuff. As much as I love the steamroller, I don't know how much you want to, you know, back a fire crotch against a guy who puts gasoline on people. So I'm going to go with Azatar here, even though I love me some Steamroller.
I mean, I can't wait to see Abu fight again as well. His brother, Azatar's brother, Oddman's brother, he's a serious badass. He had a great debut. We just never saw him again. I love how they fight. And I like Steamroller too. You know, I've had a couple exchanges with his brother. I saw him fight Jalen Turner in Atlanta. I like Matt. He's very tough. He's gritty, true New Yorker. Like, I got nothing bad to say about him. It's just that he's open to getting hit, and you do not want to get hit by this guy, period. So that's kind of where my analysis goes with that. And then as far as your buddy scouting out a Middle Eastern Conor McGregor, I mean, earlier today we saw Chinese Conor, my boy Su Mudarji, my boy Mystic Mudarji went out there and handled a 16-3 K1 kickboxer. So, you know, it's awesome to see all this talent developing all across the world, Anton.
Yeah, man. I love your nickname on that, by the way. I guess the last things I'll add on this matchup is that I will say is that the one thing I do like about Azatar is not just the takedown defense and what I saw there. Like, the guy is not just stuck on one phase. Like, when they enter space, he goes from punching at punching range to dirty boxing range. He'll do some body work. He'll feint shots to the body. He'll throw shots away and come up top. Like, there's really technical striking. There is a lot of technique. And in his post-fight interview, his last one, he was really disappointed. He wanted to go the 15 minutes and was hoping that this guy showed up. And, you know, even though being a salty winner or taking random stands, we've been seeing random fighters do that for random causes. Like, I get that. I actually really like to see a guy with that attitude. Especially, you know, if I'm one of the first people to accuse or try to, you know, fade the athletic first round guys, I like seeing technique with those guys, not just athleticism, and the fact that they are prepared and want to go the rounds to show their skills. So he's going to have, I don't know how long they're going to go, but I think he's going to have a chance to show a lot more skills. But I will side with Azatar. I'm not uber confident over the moon. It's going to be a crazy fight, but I like Azatar here.
And last but not least, opening up the main card, we got a showdown between Amanda Ribas. She's taking on Marina Rodriguez. And this is the definition of striker versus grappler, my friend. I mean, I've bet on Marina every single UFC fight she's had. And Dan Tom, I hate to say this, but when I die, I hope that Marina Rodriguez lowers me into my grave so she can let me down one final time. You know what I mean, Danton? Because it's like against Randa Marcos, a draw. Well, I got my money back, but it's like, Marina, like, you're so much better than this girl. Come on. Cash for me against Jessica Aguilar. Cash for me against Tisha Torres. Then we had her against Cynthia Calvillo too. Wins the first two rounds comfortably. Gets absolutely smashed the second it hits the ground in the third round. But it was a draw. I got my money back. Then we fight the former, I was going to say George Washington of the division because Carla was the first ever strawweight champion. But you don't want to call her Kamala because Kamala's vice president. So I'm not sure what analogy to make here, but I'll just say she fought the first ever champion and the lady with the most takedowns in that division. I bet her there as well. It goes to split decision, and the issue is she can't get up from bottom. And it's like one of those things where it's like, Marina, if you could just stuff a takedown, you're up there with Yan Jonan. You're up there with these top five people in the division. If you could stuff a takedown, you might fight for a title in the next year. So it really pisses me off when, you know, instead of going to Alpha Male in California, addressing this weakness, she's just back in whatever gym in Brazil she's at because, you know, she got so much loyalty to a fault, Dan Tom. It's like, why don't bring your coaches out with you to California? Let's nip this in the butt so it never happens again. Because here against a black belt in jiu-jitsu and a judo black belt in Amanda Ribas, I mean, it's like, Marina, we know you're going to light her up standing, but we also know Amanda Ribas is no dummy. We know Amanda Ribas trains at ATT. We know Amanda Ribas has landed a takedown in every single UFC fight. We know Amanda Ribas took down Mackenzie Dern, went into her guard, and had zero issues whatsoever. So what are you going to do about it? So Dan Tom, it just really breaks my heart that I have to, you know, drop one of my top prospects. Is when I talk about Yan Jonan being a future world champion, Yan Jonan left her comfort zone. Yan Jonan came to the United States. Yan Jonan addressed her wrestling. Marina, why can't you do the same thing? Like, and then you hear her interviews when she talks about the Carla fight, she blames it on the quarantine. It's like, no, the quarantine wasn't the issue. The fact that you can't get up from bottom is the issue. So what's going to happen here? So here's the angle I can make for Marina, just purely on the number. I mean, when you look at Marina's history, let me read the odds. She was minus 160 against Randa. She was minus three something against Jessica. She was a dog against Tisha. So I bet her as a dog against Tisha. She was a favorite against Carla. Now all of a sudden she's plus 250 against Hibas. And it's like one of those things where we know you have a huge edge on the feet. And the Esparza fight was all the way back in July. You've had almost half a year to address this issue. And I like Marina. I want to think that she's addressed that issue. But deep down in my heart, Dan Tom, I know damn well she hasn't addressed shit. And I know as soon as this hits the mat, she's not going to get back up. And if I do have a plus 250 ticket on Marina, I can go ahead and rip it up because what's going to happen when she gets her back taken? What's going to happen when she gets full mounted by a serious black belt? I love Marina. I hope she wins, but Amanda Hibas is about to take her down to finish this fight, Dan Tom.
Yeah, man. I almost wonder if like the matchmakers feel the same way you do, because sometimes you look at certain matchups and it's almost like the matchmakers are, I don't know if they're trying to manage the fighters through like hard lessons where it's like, okay, you didn't get the wrestler this time, but you're going to have to learn to defend takedowns if you want to be in the UFC. Here's another wrestler. And then they fail again, right, Dan? And then what does the matchmaker do again? They give him another wrestler. And you're like, why are they doing it? But then part of me is like, you know what? I can kind of appreciate if that's what the matchmaker's doing here. Because, yeah, you have to learn how to defend this stuff. You have to, you know, wake up and kind of take your game to a new level. And it's not so much that moving camps are going to do it necessarily. But I don't know if you bring this up. But, it is true. And I hear this from actual, you know, native Brazilians. So even though it's not our turf to speak on, but I've even heard Brazilians admit themselves that, you know, the loyalty is to a fault with a lot of it. You know, like you hear a lot of the Brazilians, especially earlier in the day when they would move up to the bigger teams about 10 years ago, they would get, you know, a bunch of crap from Brazil. People call them a traitor and all these things. So it gets
Sorry to interrupt you. I hate interrupting you, but you know what the word is for traitor in Portuguese, right? They got a specific word for it. They got this word and it's criante. And as soon as if you hear a Brazilian use the word criante, that means shit went down or shit is going down, because that is like the ultimate disrespect. And basically, that's what they call people who like leave jujitsu gyms to go to another one. They call them criantes. And I'm telling you right now, Dan Tom, you hear a Brazilian throw around that word, you know shit got real. Because you know Carlos Felipe, the heavyweight?
Yeah.
So he's like on a 2-fight win streak. Like, dude, you're moving up the rankings. He keeps calling out this guy, Rafael Pessoa, who like got knocked out his last fight. And the reason why, so I hear a bunch of Portuguese. I don't know what he's saying. And then I hear the word Rafael Pessoa, criante. I was like, oh shit. So they got some serious beef. So yeah, that's the word you're looking for.
Well, Amanda Ribas don't have that problem, but then again, she went to a very, you know, Brazilian centric camp and American top team. And of course you've got, you know, Brazilian centric trainers, not just Conan Silveira, but Pahumpa, who's, you know, a great Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructor that works with a lot of the guys down there. He is the smaller gentleman, good looking guy, you know, tattoos, looks like a very, you know, since I have a great connection with all the male and female fighters. He's a guy I like seeing in a fighter's corner when I'm trying to be critical about these things. Right. He's working really closely with Hibas. So it's not like she's like resting on her laurels or past ranks or competitions that are in completely different sports, like, you know, sport jiu-jitsu or stuff that doesn't translate. Hibas's style translates just fine. I feel just fine about her there. It's more like, you know, running into a knee, but it's not like the Hooker and Chandler dynamic. And no, not just because we're talking about ladies, and nor am I trying to pick on the ladies by saying that, but the knee technique is just different. In fact, you know, those crucial takedowns that Dan talked about her giving up, a lot of those were off knees, because she, even though she's really good with them, Marina Rodriguez, just because you're good, tall, athletic, at least in comparison to your counterparts, that doesn't mean you could just spam them whenever you want. And she doesn't learn that lesson yet, and she's been taken down for it. So for that reason, I'm not as worried here, even though I would love to be contrarian. I would love to be skeptical. I would love to fade the big lines. That being said, it doesn't surprise me here, and I got no issue at least picking Amanda Hibas here.
I mean, Dan, you know, I like Marina Rodriguez. I bet her every single UFC fight. You know, I want to take this plus 250 on Marina Rodriguez, but I also know Marina ain't addressing her weaknesses. She's blaming it on the quarantine. The travel. It's like, Marina, when you were in Brazil against Randa, you couldn't get up either. So, like, come on. And it just bothers me because it's like, what makes me the most sad, Dan Tom, is that Marina's probably not going to live up to her potential. Like, I truly believe that. If she just fixed that issue, which it's easier said than done, I understand, she could fight for a title, Dan Tom. She's that talented. But instead, it's going to go down like a Brandon Vera. It's going to go down like an Eric Silva. It's going to go down like a Brandon Thatch. And we're going to talk about what could have been. So it sucks, but it is what it is. Hey, at least Amanda's addressing all areas of her game. At least she moved to the States. At least she's not, you know, fucking up her career. So, yeah. And I know I'm being harsh. It's because I care about Marina, guys. I love Marina. And I want to see her do well. But it's tough in this spot. I got Hibas here, Dan.
I'm with you.
Now, thank you very much to all our listeners, all our supporters for joining us here on the Line Movement MMA Betting Show. Follow Dan Tom at Dan Tom MMA. Follow me at Best Fight Picks. Follow Line Movement at Line_Movement. Go to linemovement.com. Give this video a like, a subscribe. Man, we truly, truly appreciate your support. And thank you to everybody behind the scenes, our producer, Jordan. Thank you so much, Jordan. Everybody else, Nick, Brian, Joe, Dan, James, everybody else, Line Movement family. Truly appreciate you guys. I hope everybody enjoys the fights. Stay safe, and we will speak soon.
What's up, everybody? If you dug the show, give it a like and be sure to subscribe to Line Movement, our channel, and visit linemovement.com.